Good morning, and an early and happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We have been receiving gifts from the earth for thousands and thousands of years. Today, we need to say thank you. Today, we need to pause from all our worries and concerns. Today, we need to remember the words of Eric Hoffer, who suggests that the hardest arithmetic to master is that which enables us to count our blessings. This morning, we are each and all invited to do our best. We usually remain standing for our chalice lighting, but this morning, I'm going to invite us all to sit. We have a special chalice lighting this morning that Amanda is going to share with us. Our little people are learning every week when they go into the parish hall for their Sunday school classes to be grateful together in a way that is bodily demonstrated. Simple words to remind us of all that we have every week to be grateful for.
For this movement, but we are going to move in our seats. And the chalice lighting that we're using in the younger class right now is, we light this chalice for the warmth of love, the light of truth, and the energy of action. And we're using movements to do it. So I'll show you the movements, and then we can all do it together. We light this chalice for the warmth of love, the light of truth, and the energy of action. I think one time through we did it. That was great.
Good morning. This reading is by Sarah Morose Campbell from a book called Into the Wilderness. This poem is called The Growing Season. I am not religious, says my neighbor, as she hoes the rows between her beans and corn. Oh, yes, you are, I say to myself. To plant a seed is an act of faith. To collect compost is a response of gratitude to the Creator. To water, fertilize, and mulch the ground is an expression of religious responsibility. To kneel down and pull weeds is a prayer. To harvest is to participate in the fullness and grace of the Spirit. To protect and replenish creation is to love, the Spirit many call God. I am not religious, says my neighbor. Yes, you are, I say. Thank you.
So this morning we have one story that Amanda and I are going to share in three separate pieces. So you have to follow the thread from start to finish. And in between each part, we're going to join together in singing one verse of hymn 163, For the Earth Forever Turning, just so you're not worried about having it in place at the end of the first part. This is a story about Uncle Henry's house and his Thanksgiving bread.
For many of us, Thanksgiving is a very special holiday, a time when friends and relatives gather, sometimes from near, sometimes from far, to share time, a special meal, and a focus on being grateful. And children especially look forward to the celebration. So it was with this family. The children loved to go visit their Auntie Rita and Uncle Henry's home for Thanksgiving. All the rest of the family would be there. There would be lots of good food, a game or two, and it would just be so fun. Everyone who came for dinner brought something special to the meal. So even before they took off their coats, the youngest children carried their sweet potatoes and corn pudding into the kitchen to add to the other yummy things. On the counter in the kitchen was a large, round loaf of bread. It was Uncle Henry's special bread that he made every year at Thanksgiving. Just looking at it made you hungry. It had the warm, inviting smell of fresh yeast bread. And peeking through the rich brown crust were nuts and colorful fruits. It looked irresistible, The little boy put down the sweet potatoes he was carrying, and in the same motion, his hand swept over the top of the bread, aiming for the bright red cherry sticking out of the top of the crust.
"Stop!" cried Uncle Henry. "Don't touch that bread. It took 1,000 people to make that loaf of bread."
The boy pulled his hand back without taking the piece of cherry. "It did?" he asked. "How could it?"
"Maybe even more than 1,000, said Uncle Henry thoughtfully. "Go take your coats off, and we'll figure it out." While they hung their coats in the hall closet, Uncle Henry went to get a pad of paper and a marker.
"All right," he said, as they settled on the family room couch. "What's the first thing you think of that goes into making bread?"
"What do you think, Will?"
Flour.
"Excellent. That's what they said."
"That is exactly right." "Right," said Uncle Henry. "And where do you think I got the flour?"
Anyone? "At the store. That's right."
"Right again. And does the store run itself?" asked Uncle Henry innocently. "How did the flour get itself onto the shelf for me to buy?"
"Maybe they have
milk."
"They might have milk, but how does the bread get onto the shelf? What do you think? Do you think somebody's there to put it on the shelf?" "People. Yeah, that's what I think."
"That's right. Who else at the store had something to do with the flour other than the people who stock the shelves?" Uncle Henry asked. And with the children's help, he added the manager, the cashier, and the bagger to the list. "Now," Uncle Henry asked, "do they make the flour at the store?" The children shook their heads.
"But I'm aware I need some children's help right now up here, so who can we get to come help me? I just need 2 or maybe 3. That'd be excellent. Come on up." "We forgot Uncle Henry was making a list here, right? Come on up, Will. You hold this.
So the boy suggested maybe a truck delivered it.
Put that up.
The boy was very interested in trucks these days. A trucker brought it, and they added trucker to their list.
"We're a little behind. We're still on the stockers.
Here you go." And stockers and cashiers.
And managers.
Managers.
Manager. You can just hang
it. Will?
Stick it right on there. Put it up on there. Excellent. Here's another one.
And in addition to the truckers, there were the warehouse workers at the windmill, at the mill for the flour that Will's talking about. There's the train crew and the loaders who load the trucks and the workers at the farm mill. And the farm worker who ran the harvest in the first, who grew the wheat in the first place and cut it and brought it to the mill. And then Uncle Henry asked, "What about the trains and the trucks and the machinery? We wouldn't have the flour without them."
"Train crew. Right on top."
"Who built them?" And the list grew with designers, inventors, bricklayers, machinists, and on and on. When they ran short of ideas, they had filled 3 pages on Uncle Henry's pad, or covered the pulpit. Almost 100 people in all. "Well," said Uncle Henry, "so much for the flour. Now, about the eggs, and the sugar, and the spices, and the fruit, and the nuts, and the butter, and the yeast, and the..." "Stop," said the boy. "That's enough. You win. We won't even have enough paper to write down all of those people. I guess it really did take more than 1,000 people to make that single loaf of bread. And I always thought it was your special bread."
"Well, it is," said Uncle Henry. "But Thanksgiving always reminds me of how I couldn't bake my special bread without the help of thousands of other people. When we hold our hands around the table, on Thanksgiving Thursday and say what we each are thankful for, I'm going to say for the thousands of people who helped prepare this meal for us, said the young girl, who had been listening very carefully. Do you think the others will understand?
Yes, said Uncle Henry. I think they will.
So many of you may be aware that my husband Dan was in a bicycle accident last Wednesday, flying over the handlebars, having hit a pothole. And he is still at Mount Auburn Hospital working hard to avoid pneumonia. There is nothing in the world that helps one count their blessings more than we are this week, as there are few things like accidents to put life in perspective. We think about the emergency room people, all the products they had to manage and deal with, all the ways in which they were comforting and patient, all the people who step up. There were two men who helped him up off the pavement because he couldn't quite move. They're like those anonymous good souls. You know, I wish I could find them and thank them too. So I was reading Annie Dillard recently. I don't know how many of you may be familiar with her. She's a writer and naturalist. She investigates to the nth degree all things in the natural world. Her essays are deep and probing. At the front of her newly released series of essays is a quote from the Quran, the Surah of the Cow. They will question thee concerning what they should expend. Say, the abundance. The Quran is less familiar to many of us. They will question thee concerning what they should expend. Say, the abundance. That is, of course, a particular translation of the passage. And as Michael Robbins of the Chicago Tribune, who reviewed Dillard's book, suggests, it's beautiful. It seems to say, along with Dillard, spend it all. Spend it now. Your life, he means, your energy, your joy, your very presence. What Dillard asks in her writing, he assures us, is what kind of life are you leading? What is our life? What is our gratitude if we do not, as she suggests, spend it all? Spend it now. What are we waiting for exactly? This month of November for us is about awareness. So Nancy Wilbur started us off brilliantly with the intention of ulala, how we can turn our predispositions from despair to delight if we are willing to make a plan and attach joy to it. When once she despised olives, she assured us, they might even be now for her a daily and delightful ooh-la-la. When we are aware, we do have choice. Today we consider our levels of awareness for that which sustains us, that literally feeds us on the one hand as breath, as bread, the gift of our earth. In the busyness of our lives and the plethora of complications, it is so easy to disconnect from the gifts. And because it's Thanksgiving, our annual day of gratitude, inspired, I didn't know this before, as a national holiday by Abraham Lincoln as a means of uniting our country, we consider as well that which sustains our hearts and souls, that nourishes our everyday and gives us pause to be grateful. Curiously, the Tribune's writer Michael Robbins assures us that a more accurate translation of the Quranic passage from Diller's book would be, they ask you again what they should give, say, give what you can spare. And Robbins makes the point that we do not all have abundance. And yet, I wonder if that is true. Dillard says in life, give the abundance. Others say, give what you can spare. The difference may have to do with our perception of what we have, which has everything to do with awareness of what we are grateful for, of what we are connected to. Recall our opening words. The hardest arithmetic to master is that which enables us to count our blessings. And the question becomes one of how much attention we spend on the details, like our friend Uncle Henry. How often do we look beyond the obvious? We are busy, busy folks, and mostly not so connected to the sources of our nourishment. Though I think in the literal sense, that is changing. We all pay more attention to where our food comes from, perhaps. And some of us with gardens even, others frequenting fresh food markets or farm shares. Still, this age we live in is a disconnected one, as we are not dependent on that produce alone. There's a great story from a book called Soul Food, by Jack Kornfield and Christina Feldman. A rich industrialist from the north was horrified to find the southern fisherman lying lazily beside his boat smoking a pipe. Which seems to me a curious juxtaposition of northern industrialist and southern fisherman, not to mention whatever he's smoking. "Why aren't you fishing?" said the industrialist. "Because I have caught enough fish for the day," said the fisherman. "Why don't you catch some more?" "What would I do with it?" asked the fisherman. "Well, you could earn more money," was the reply. "With that, you could have a motor fixed to your boat to go into deeper waters and catch more fish. Then you would make enough money to buy more nylon nets. These would bring you more fish and more money. Soon you would have enough money to own 2 boats. Maybe even a fleet of boats. Then you would be a rich man like me." "And what would I do then?" the fisherman asked. "Well, then you could really enjoy life." "Well, what do you think I'm doing right now?" So who in this story do you most identify with? And why is his rest framed as laziness anyway? Just asking. Did you know that human beings started baking bread 30,000 years ago? It's hard to fathom what life might have been like 30,000 years ago. There were so very few of us, for one thing, and we only started writing and keeping track about 5,500 years ago. But bread was a staple even then. We have that in common. It's hard to imagine they had the time to consider what to expend, whether abundance or only what they could spare. We imagine their lives must have been primarily about survival. But perhaps that feels familiar in a strange way as well. Our northern industrialist belongs to a certain shift in human culture, a certain revolution of values, if you will. Environmentalist Wendell Berry suggests that the Industrial Revolution has proceeded from the beginning with only 2 purposes: to replace human workers with machines and to market its products, regardless of their usefulness or their effects, at the highest possible profit, and so to concentrate wealth into ever fewer hands. That is our world, the one we still live in. And it disinclines us to be reflective, to consider 1 or 2 fish sufficient to catch for the day. But it needn't. When we are aware, we have choice. It is, I believe, the religious impulse that inclines us to pay attention, to be aware, the impulse to religare, to reconnect, to bind ourselves together. "But I am not religious," says my neighbor. as she hoes the rows between her beans and corn, tending the proverbial garden. Oh, but you are. To plant a seed is an act of faith. It need not be a literal one, an idea, perhaps, some new beginning, a recommitment to our shared lives. To kneel down and pull weeds, ridding our beds of useless thoughts, making room for those that grow healthy and strong, and working for a world in which it can be so. To harvest is to participate in the fullness and grace of the Spirit, we heard, taking the time to find the blessings and know them for what they are. I am not religious, says my neighbor. I'm not a believer or connected or maybe not even whole. Oh, yes, you are, I say to myself. You are here, recognizing and preparing to spend of your abundance. We have work to do together, we know that. But we need the times, too, when we consider our catch complete for the day and rest in abundance and in gratitude. Let's all be sure that we make time for that. So may it be.